was a pleasure for me to finally get to meet this man in person. We've talked to him on the phone and on the air when he was in England, but here he is right in front of me here at the Aquarius Hotel and Casino in Laughlin. We're overlooking the beautiful Colorado River. Nick Pope, he's the author of Open Skies, Closed Minds. He was in charge of UFO investigations for the Ministry of Defense in Britain from 1991 through 1994. And last week, Nick Pope, I think, scored a real coup. He was able to get the New York Times to print an op-ed piece by him in which Nick talked about UFOs, various cases that he'd investigated in England, as well as he had the angle that the United States should not stop investigating UFOs. You know, officially we have not investigated UFOs since, I think, 1969. Anyway, Nick, welcome to the show. I think you told me just before we started the broadcast that it took 23 hours to get here from England. I guess that's counting the time zones. But when you go back to England, I think if you count those time zones, you get a gain, don't you? You gain something, 7-8 hours, something like that?
Well, it's 8 hours time difference. But, of course, flying, particularly flying over the Atlantic from west to east, you've got the wind on your tail, so as opposed to flying into it. So it's always quicker going back than coming.
In your presentations, Nick, I know you made one here in Laughlin at the Congress last February, and I think you spoke at MUFON recently. What do you bring out when you speak? For instance, what did you say at MUFON?
I did three or four different things. I started off with the history of the British government's UFO project, which was broadly similar to Project Blue Book in the US. I then spoke about my own time on the project, how I would do investigations, what I concluded. I delved into two or three different cases, some interesting ones there.
We've talked about some of those cases before on the phone, but let's talk about some more here in a moment. Let's talk about the last thing, though.
Sure, yeah. The last thing I did, which in a sense is the biggest story at the moment, is I spoke about the forthcoming release of the Ministry of Defense's UFO files. Now, the British government confirmed just before Christmas that it had made a policy decision that all UFO files not already in our national archives would be released over the next 3 years, and that process will start literally within a few weeks.
And you were part of the government at one time. Do you think they really mean it?
Yes, I do. Okay. I mean, I worked for the British government for 21 years. 3 years of that was on their UFO project. I did that from 91 to 94. I honestly don't think in the UK there is a kind of what I would characterize as a spaceship in a hangar type smoking gun that would prove an extraterrestrial reality. If there is anything like that, I suspect it lies elsewhere. I haven't seen that sort of material, but there is a lot of interesting stuff in the files. Policy files, sighting files, some interesting new cases.
Well, you and I talked a little bit about Rundelson Forest in one of our phone interviews. We've done a couple. You actually investigated that one, didn't you?
Yes, I reopened the investigation. Uh-huh. I mean, the actual incident occurred in 1980, of course, before I joined the ministry.
You were doing the UFO thing 91 to 94, if I remember.
Yes, okay. But I quickly realized that this file, the case file on the Rendlesham Forest incident, was absolute dynamite. And I also realized that mistakes had been made. This was probably the best opportunity we'd had, and we'd missed it. So I decided to reopen the investigation, check a few facts, see if I could find out anything else. The case is still unexplained, of course, but some interesting new developments. Every now and then a new witness surfaces, unlike Roswell, where most of the witnesses are now dead. This is reasonably contemporary.
Enough,
yeah. So new witnesses are coming forward. And, you know, just the week of the conference here, History Channel ran a new documentary on the case. So, again, that sort of thing, I think, is going to encourage people who've maybe previously kept silent to say, well, hey, look, if the colonel is talking about it, if all these other United States Air Force people are talking about it, we'll talk about it.
When you first took on this job, with the Ministry of Defense investigating UFO sightings reports. You did other things, too, I think paranormal events as well.
Yes. You simply can't run a UFO project without finding yourself drawn into everything else weird and wonderful. And it's not that these things are in the formal terms of reference, but it's just that there's nowhere else to send them. So if somebody flying a military helicopter sees a crop circle, I'll get the report. If somebody sees a ghost on a military base, I'll get the report. If somebody claims to have been abducted by aliens or says, I want to use my psychic powers to do remote viewing and become a psychic spy for my country, again, it will come to the UFO project.
Had you been aware of remote viewing before you took the UFO position there at the Ministry of Defense? MOD, I think, is what you guys refer to it as.
Yes, we say MOD. Yeah. I guess, as you say, DOD the States, which would be the equivalent. I'd been aware of it in a vague sense, but I really knew nothing about it. And when I was at the Ministry of Defense, I found out a little bit more. And indeed, in 2007, after many, many years of secrecy, the MOD released, under the Freedom of Information Act, a previously classified, at the level secret UK eyes only, study on into remote viewing that they'd done very shortly after 9/11, actually, which was interesting in itself.
Yes, so it is.
It looks as if the British government had been trying to recruit psychics to see if they could go after Osama bin Laden, to go after maybe weapons of mass destruction, that sort of thing. I mean, as I always say, the intelligence targets are the intelligence targets. It doesn't matter what methods you use, your targets are the same things.
You know, I've always been a little skeptical of remote viewing, but evidently my skepticism is fading fast. My good friend Russell Targ, he's been into that for a long time. The whole concept at first seemed pretty far out to me.
I think it's what the government would characterize as a low probability, high impact kind of situation. In other words, the skeptical people in government will say, well, probably won't work. But they'll then go on to realize, but hey, if it does, we've got to try it, because for a comparatively minuscule amount of finance, if this thing could be gotten to work, the spin-offs, the benefits would just be huge. So that's I think, the mindset that the U.S. government, the British government, and others who've dabbled in this have come in from.
Now, Nick Pope, when you took this job and you were assigned the UFO job, how did others in the MOD treat you? Were you kind of like a stepchild, or did they embrace you? In other words, oh, yeah, sure, you're investigating that. You didn't find out anything, huh? Or was it, wow, what did you find out? Or a little bit of both?
It was a little bit of both. Uh-huh. I mean, as I always say, the government, it's not thing. It's just a bunch of people.
Right.
And in the MOD, there were skeptics, there were believers. So I came across people who thought the UFO project was a complete waste of time and taxpayers' money. But I came across other people who thought, wow, hey, this is great.
Right.
And like you say, sort of questioned me and said, well, come on then. What's going on? What's the truth?
Yeah, in fact, when you said a little earlier in the conversation about not everybody knows what's going on, that's definitely true in this country as well. I know a lot of people work for secret agents, agency-type jobs, and they're just as curious about UFOs as me. They're actually asking me what I know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, for 21 years, I worked alongside the military. I've come across people in the intelligence agencies, and people are people. They're curious about these sorts of things.
It seems to me there have been some interesting sightings in England recently. I know you're no longer in that job, but you've got to be keeping up with it.
Oh, I'm keeping alongside things, yes. Last year, we had possibly the most significant UFO sighting for many, many years in the UK. A commercial airline pilot called Ray Bowyer was flying his aircraft over the channel between England and France near the Channel Islands. And he saw, in fact, two UFOs along with some of his passengers. And he said his initial estimate was that these things were about a mile long. And the really sensational thing about this is it was tracked on radar. There was a radar return. Now, the radar return was inconclusive, but it proved that at the time and at the location that he and his passengers said they saw this thing, there was something there, and it wasn't an aircraft. It was an uncorrelated target.
Now way back there, and it's 15 years now, a little more over when you were there, investigating UFOs, were these big craft around like they are now?
Yes, we had
there's lots of big craft reports now.
Oh, yeah, massive craft. One of the phrases that came up from time to time in the Ministry of Defense's case file was the flying football field, because that was literally the only analogy that people could come up with for the size of these things.
And that's same here in the States, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
More than one listener has called me when I used to do live shows and would talk about, it was as big as a football field.
Yeah, that's we've got plenty of cases like that in the MOD files.
You got any cases... extra, reports of somebody getting out of these things, something landing besides Rendlesham?
Very few, to be honest. There are some alien contact cases. There are certainly some abduction reports, but generally speaking, reports of landings and reports of entities are a tiny, tiny percentage of the overall numbers.
It's interesting. You're really kind of the source now, and you're kind of an icon or a legend or whatever you want to refer to. If Nick Pope says it these days about something, people are inclined to believe because you work for the government.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm far too modest to sort of say that. But, I mean, yes, I think... Certainly insofar as the way the media perceive
me. That's what I'm talking about.
I think the media, certainly in the UK, they can find a lot of people who are interested in this subject, but inevitably if they can talk to someone like me who's done it for the government,
understand your claim to fame properly, one newspaper grabbed it and made a big deal about you reporting or coming clean or something. I remember that report a couple of years ago.
Well, that was a slightly distorted report. What actually happened?
I know it was.
Yeah.
We talked about that. It wasn't true necessarily, because that's why I contacted you, because they used the tabloid approach.
Yes. What happened was that it was in, as I recall, it was in November 2006. Yes. I'd left the Ministry of Defense at the end of October. A newspaper got hold of this. They ran a story that I'd resigned. That was true. But the spin on the story was Nick Pope says that we're wide open to alien invasion. Well, that really wasn't what I'd said. What I'd said was that the UFO phenomenon, whatever we thought it was, raised some important defense, national security, and flight safety issues. But I guess that wasn't a good enough soundbite. But once the newspaper ran that story about Nick Pope resigns, and you know, there were stories that I'd resigned in protest, that was been done. I mean, all these different rumors. And the fact of the matter is, I just felt that after 21 years, it was time to move to fresh challenges. I've got other business interests and things. But once the story about alien invasion hit the tabloids, everything went crazy.
So, even though they stretched the truth, it's enabled you, I think, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's enabled you, I think, to have a voice to talk about some of these things, and it seems to have regenerated your interest somewhat.
Well, I think I had been in the public eye for some years, but there's no doubt that this particular report perhaps took it to a new level. I'd agree with that, yeah.
What is happening as far as the government? They're going to, release this on a website or report. How are they going to do that in England? France, I guess, they put it up on a website.
France put it on a website, and, of course, the story was that they put it all up at once, and then the volume of hits they got took down the website. The Ministry of Defense are going to pass it to the National Archives. The National Archives will make the files available in their ordinary paper form. I mean, you'll be able to go up and see them. But also, they'll be made available digitally. They'll be scanned in. So the I think it's called the Documents Online service. So you from anywhere in the world, you will be able to access this information.
We're talking with Nick Pope here, and, of course, he's going to leave Sunday. If you leave, what is it? You're not going to get back home till Monday anyway.
Yeah, because of the of the length of the journey and because of the time difference, it's basically a question of I leave on Sunday, but I get back home on Monday.
You got what do you do in private life these days? You said you had other businesses.
Oh, all sorts of different things. I'm a freelance journalist. I write for several of the UK's national newspapers. I do some TV development production work, coming up with ideas for new shows, not just on UFOs and the unexplained, but all sorts of subjects. I do some public relations. I do some consultancy. Bit of everything, really.
And so you have a web presence, too.
I've got my website, which is nickpope.net, and that's really the central point of contact for information about me and my work.
Now, what you got a movie project or a TV project you're working on right now you can share with us?
I'm developing a whole bunch of different TV shows, some on UFOs, some on the unexplained, some on kind of the Cold War, intelligence, the military, a whole bunch of stuff. And also, a couple of years ago, probably longer than that, I wrote two science fiction novels, and there's quite a bit of interest at the moment in turning these into either a TV series or a movie. So that's a big priority at the moment.
What were the name of your novels? What?
I called them Operation Thunderchild and Operation Lightning Strike. They're basically alien invasion novels, but based on what I know about MOD warfighting and crisis management, and based on what I know about government UFO investigations. So it throws all those things into the mix. And funnily enough, these were the only two sci-fi novels ever to have needed government clearance. They were vetted before they were published.
Do you think there's an ET threat someplace?
I don't know is the honest answer, politicians' answer, but I think, you know, there's a lot of intriguing evidence when you get into the UFO phenomenon, but there's nothing that I would characterize as hard proof, as in, you know, this
certainly during your official time of investigation, you never really ran across anything like that.
I never ran across anything like wreckage, like bodies, no absolute hard proof, but like I say, a lot of intriguing evidence.
When we talk about, what I was thinking of was more of the UFO and ET contact being benign, it might be something more serious. And you let that to your novels.
Yes. I mean, I think that the bottom line is we don't really know. Uh-huh. I mean, people have got all sorts of different
Nick,
theories.
You've got to understand why I'm getting it, and I'm sure you already know. I mean, you have this MOD defense experience, and now you're writing a novel where there might be an ET war or an invasion or whatever, people say, aha, he's trying to tell us something.
Yeah, I've heard those theories, but I'm honestly not.
You're here to deny it.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was just, I mean, so many sci-fi authors have had a go at the alien invasion.
I haven't read them yet.
Yeah, I mean, so many authors have had a go at alien invasion novels. I just thought I would have a go too.
Do you have a how do your aliens invade us? Do they do it with laser weapons and or do they like the old Robert A. Heinlein a novel of years ago with the Puppet Masters where they slap these things on your back? I mean, what do they do to us?
Books? I don't want to sort of give too much away for those who haven't read them.
But
basically, I don't want to spoil the ending of the film then.
Right.
But essentially, there is a massive alien spacecraft on its way, claiming, you know, they claim that they come in peace and that they seek friendship and things. Others are not so sure. There's a bit of disinformation on both sides. I blur the lines about good guys and bad guys and leave a lot of things open. And I just try and play it as I think things might really unfold, trying to bring my inside knowledge of politicians, military, the intelligence community, they would react.
Sure, it'd be a good movie or a TV series, either one.
Yeah, I hope so.
When you package these things in the UK, I imagine these days it's not much different than a Hollywood producer. You're out there peddling your wares to whomever wants to be interested.
Well, I'm fortunate, I guess, because of my government background and because I'm quite high profile in the media, I tend to get a lot of approaches direct saying, you know, hey, you know, we're interested in this. Let's see if we can't work this up. Now, I've had a couple of previous approaches which haven't led to anything, but, well, third time lucky, perhaps.
How about the official BBC? Are they interested in things like that, or are you going to...
I do a fair bit of work for the BBC. Uh-huh. Whether this project is something they would be interested in, I'm not quite sure, but I do quite a lot of non-fiction stuff. I appear quite regularly on BBC News bulletins, BBC documentaries and things.
Nick Pope, I've always enjoyed listening to you on other shows and our shows as well, and it's a pleasure meeting you.
Thanks, Jerry. It's good to meet you, too.
You got something you'd like to leave with our listeners that I haven't covered?
No, I don't think there's anything else, but I can't overstress, really, the importance, I think, of the MOD's forthcoming release of these UFO files. And I would say to people, track this story. It's going to be a 3-year rolling program of disclosure. Track this story both on the MOD website, mod.uk, and the National Archives in the UK, their website too. But this is going to, when it starts, it's going to hit the mainstream media, certainly in the UK, probably
sure.
All around the world. So,
I'm sure.
Yeah, watch this space.
We'll be watching it. We'll be watching it. Got a rollout date for me?
It's still being debated. There are one or two issues to be nailed down. The MOD said originally we hope to start spring 2008, so it really could be any time now.
Okay, any time. Nick Pope, it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for dropping by. And welcome to Nevada. This is the first time you've been in Laughlin or the first time in Nevada?
First time in Nevada, first time in Laughlin. I've been to the States many times, but this is a new one on me.
Well, it's an interesting place. I'm sure you'll agree with that.
Absolutely.
Till next time, this is Jerry Pippin.